Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 79. Lord Balaram goes on pilgrimage. And apparently the first verse with a purport is 15. I mean 11 to 15, correct? 11 is there, is it?
Yes.
Okay, it's actually 11 to 15. Okay, fine. So let me just read up to that point right now. First of all, chapter introduction. This chapter describes how Lord Baladev satisfied the Brahmins by killing Balbala, bathed at various holy pilgrimage sites, and attempted to dissuade Bhimasen and Duryodhan from fighting. At the sacrificial arena of the sages at Naimisharanya Forest, a harsh wind began to blow on the new moon day, spreading the obnoxious smell of pus and obscuring everything with dust. The demon Balbala then appeared with a trident in his hand, his massive body pitch black and his face very frightening. Lord Baladev caught the demon with his plough and then struck him a ferocious blow on the head with his club, killing him. The sages chanted Lord Baladev's glories and presented him with lavish gifts. Lord Balaram then began his pilgrimage, during which he visited many holy tirthas. When he heard news of the battle between the Kurus and Pandavas, the Lord went to Kurukshetra to try to stop the duel between Bhima and Duryodhan. But he could not dissuade them from fighting, so deep was their enmity. Understanding that the fight was the arrangement of fate, Lord Baladev left the battlefield and returned to Dwaraka. Sometime later, Balaram again went to the Naimisharanya forest, where the sages performed a number of fire sacrifices on his behalf. Lord Baladev reciprocated by granting the sages transcendental knowledge and revealing to them his eternal identity. Text 1. Shishukravacha Tata Paravani Pavrite Prachanda Pangshu Varshana Nimo Vayo Abud Rajan Punyagandas to Sarvasha. Shukadev Goswami said, "Then on the new moon day, O King, a fierce and frightening wind arose, scattering dust all about and spreading the smell of pus everywhere. Tato Meja Mayam Varsham Alvalena Vinirmutan Abhavadya Gishalayam Son Vadrishyata Shuladrip." Next, onto the sacrificial arena came a downpour of abominable things sent by Balbala, after which the demon himself appeared, trident in hand. Tanvilokya Brihathayam Binanjana Chayopaman Tapta Tamra Shikash Shmashrum Amstragra Bro Kutimukam Sasmara Mushalam Rama Parasainya Vidalanam Halam Chadaicha Damanam Taitunam Upatastatu. The immense demon resembled a mass of black carbon. His top knot and beard were like molten copper, and his face had horrible fangs and furrowed eyebrows. Upon seeing him, Lord Balaram thought of his club, which tears to pieces his enemy's armies, and his plough weapon, which punishes the demons. Thus summoned, his two weapons appeared before him at once. Tamakrishya halagrena balvalam gagane chalam Mushale na hatat hanat kruto, Murtni Brahma druham bala. With the tip of his plow, Lord Balaram caught hold of the demon Balbala as he flew through the sky. And with his club, the Lord angrily struck that harasser of Brahmins on the head. Haribol! So patat bhuvi nirvina lalato srik samutsrijan munchanarta swaram shailo yata vajra hatoruna. Balbala cried out in agony and fell to the ground. His forehead cracked open and gushing blood. He resembled a red mountain struck by a lightning bolt. According to the Acharyas, the demon appeared reddish with blood, like a mountain red with oxide. Samstucha munayo ramam prayujya vitatad shisha abhyashin chan mahabhaga vritrignam vibhudayata. The exalted sages honored Lord Rama with sincere prayers and awarded him infallible blessings. Then they performed his ritual bath, just as the demigods had formerly bathed Indra when he killed Vritra. Vajayantim tadur malam Sridhamam lana pankajam Ramaya vasasi divye divyanya varanani cha. They gave Lord Balaram a Vajayanti garland of unfading lotuses in which resided the goddess of fortune. And they also gave him a set of divine garments and jewelry. Atataya abhya nugyata koshikam echa brahmanai snatva salovaram agad yata sarayur asravat. Then, given leave by the sages, the Lord went with a contingent of Brahmins to the Koshiki River, where he bathed. From there he went to the lake from which flows the river Sarayu. Anushrotena Sarayum Prayagam Upagamyasa Snatva Santarpya Devadin Jigama Pulahashramam. The Lord followed the course of the Sarayu until he came to Prayag, where he bathed and then performed rituals to propitiate the demigods and other living beings. Next he went to the ashram of Pulaha Rishi. Purport, Pulahashrama is also known as Harikshetra. So now we come to text 11. Gomatim Gandakim Snatva Vipasha Shona Apluta Gaya Gatva Itrin Ishtva Ganga Sagara Sangame. Gomatim Gandakim Snatva Vipasham Shona Apluta Dayam Gatva Patrin Ishtva Ganga Sagara Sangame. Gomatim Gandakim Snatva Vipasham Shona Apluta Gayam Gatva Patrin Ishtva Ganga Sagara Sangame. Gomatim Gandakim Snatva Vipasham Shona Apluta Gayam Gatva Patrin Ishtva Gayatrin Ishtva,
Ganga
Sagara Sangame, Gomatim, at the Gomati River, Gandakim, the Gandaki River, Snatva, bathing. Vipasham, at the Vipasha River. Shone, at the Shona River. Apluta, having immersed himself. Gaya, to Gaya. Gatva, going. Pitrin, his forefathers. Ishva, worshipping. Ganga, of the Ganges. Sagara, and the ocean. Sangame, at the confluence. Lord Balaram bathed in the Gomati, Gandaki, and Vipasha rivers, and also immersed himself in the Shona. He went to Gaya, where he worshipped his forefathers, and to the mouth of the Ganges, where he performed purifying ablutions. So now there's also verses 12, 13, 14, and 15 combined with this. Let me just read them. Upaskrishya Mahindrado Ranam Drishva Vivaja Cha Saptagoda Varim Venam Pampam Bhima Ratim Tata Skandam Drishva Yayo Rama Sri Shailam Girishalayam Dravideshu Mahapunyam Drishva Drim Venkatam Prabhu Kamakoshnim Purim Kanchim Kabirim Chasarib Falam Sri Rangakyam Mahapunyam Yatrasami Hito Hari Rishabhadrim Hare Kshetram Dakshinam Maturam Tata Samudram Setam Agamat Mahapataka Nashanam. So, continuing the translation. At Mount Mahendra, he saw Lord Parashuram and offered him prayers. And then he bathed in the seven branches of the Godavari River, and also in the rivers Vena, Pampa, and Bhimarati. Then Lord Balaram met Lord Skanda, and visited Sri Shaila, the abode of Lord Girisha. In the southern provinces known as Dravidadesh, the Supreme Lord saw the sacred Venkata Hill, as well as the cities of Kamakoshni and Kanchi, the exalted Kaveri River, and the most holy Sri Ranga, where Lord Krishna has manifested himself. From there he went to Rishabha Mountain, where Lord Krishna also lives, and to the southern Mathura. Then he came to Setu Banda, where the most grievous sins are destroyed. Purport. Usually one goes to Gaya to worship deceased forefathers. But as Srila Vishnu Chakravarti explains, although Lord Balaram's father and grandfather was still alive, it was on his father's order that he carefully worshipped his forefathers at Gaya. Drawing insight from the Vaishnava Toshni, the Acharya further explains that although Lord Balaram was in the immediate proximity of Jagannath Puri, he did not go there, since he wanted to avoid the embarrassment of having to worship himself among the forms of Sri Krishna, Balabhadra, and Subhadra. Gomatim Gandakim Snatva Vipasham Shona Aputa Kayam Gatva Patrim Ishtva Ganga Sagara Sangame. Lord Balaram bathed in the Gomati, Gandaki, and Bipasha rivers, and also immersed himself in the Shona. He went to Gaya, where he worshipped his forefathers, and to the mouth of the Ganges, where he performed purifying ablutions. So when we read the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's focusing on Lord Krishna from the beginning of his appearance to the later portion, at least, of his pastimes. Pastimes are included in the 11th canto. And of course we do see that throughout the 10th canto and the 11th canto, that Krishna is focused upon, Krishna is the focal point. Even though Lord Balaram is there, and Lord Balaram is not different from Krishna, the only difference is difference in bodily hue. Otherwise, they're the same. Even more so than with any other forms of the Lord, even Lord Ramachandra, whose appearance day it is the day after tomorrow, and the various other forms, except of course for Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, but on the whole, they're so much one, even more so than the other forms of the Lord, like Mahavishnu and Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Narayan forms in the Vaikuntha realm, and so on. So Krishna and Balaram, they are more one than those other forms are one with Krishna. Yeah. But still we see in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam and the 11th canto that really Krishna is being focused on to a very, very large extent. At least 90%, or I'm not sure what exactly in those terms, but to a very large extent. But from time to time, we come across some incidents, pastimes, some chapters in the 10th canto where Lord Balaram is the subject. And this is one. Who of you, let us start with the men, please tell us one other pastime in the 10th canto where Lord Balaram is really the focal point.
Yes. So much when Lord Balaram became angry with Yamuna and skeptical about
the dance. Yes. Lord Balaram with the river Yamuna, and he forced her to come over to him. And now the Mataji's. You're not a Mataji. It's okay, I'm just kidding. Come on, you know.
I can't remember the demon's name, but the gorilla demon.
Gorilla. Dwivida. Oh. Madhavanga. Oh, okay, yes, good. Yes. That was when Samba was kidnapped, was it? When Samba was kidnapped, Lord Balaram went to make a negotiation to get him released. They wouldn't agree. So he took his plow and plunged it into the earth right at the foot of the walls of the city, and then in this way uprooted the whole city, complete with the earth it was standing on, and started dragging it to the Yamuna to just throw it into the Yamuna, and that would have been the end of all the inhabitants of Hastinapur. So, and Nataji's, can you think of another one? Yes? Okay, yeah. Lord Balaram returned to Vrindavan to pacify, well, to see the inhabitants of Vrindavan and to pacify them of their feelings of separation from Krishna, and he danced with gopis there. Someone else amongst the men, another one?
Not so dominant like in Chilkaram's.
Well, yeah, that's another pastime. That's, yeah, Palambasura, the killing of Palambasura in Vrindavan. What it is? Yes?
A small act, but a big action. They really need the fulfilling to.
Ah. To go there. Okay.
Stop the Lord of Mind from the motor.
Right. Okay, that's good. That's good. Another of the men. How are you? What about Dainukasura? The donkey demon. And I think we just read one, isn't it? Another one? What was it?
Ramahashana
Sutta. Right, killing of Ramahashana Sutta. And then? Okay, that's sort of. Yes. Okay, that's it, yeah, that's good. Right. I think those are really the main pastimes, at least that I can remember offhand, where Lord Balaram is very much the focal point. Otherwise, the rest of the time, it's Krishna. And amongst the demons, what we call the demons in Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, there are 21 or 2, 22 I think. And of them, two of them are killed by Krishna. That's Denikasura and Palambasura. So you know, 2 out of 20 or 20 something. So here we are then, yes, another situation where Lord Balaram is being focused upon and performing very wonderful pastimes. He is very amazing, transcendental personality. Oh, there are others. The killing of Rukmi. And then, before the killing of Rukmi, when Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, then Lord Balaram, Krishna kidnapped Rukmini. Rukmi chased them and confronted Krishna. Krishna defeated him in a fight and then humiliated him by cutting his hair off in different places, you know, so he ended up sort of looking like a a punk rocker or something strange. And Rukmini was very upset. And it was their wedding day. So, well, it was, because, you know, even though it wasn't a formal wedding, obviously Krishna kidnapped her. But that is a form of wedding, according to Vedic literatures. It is called the Rakshasa style of wedding. That the young man just kidnaps the bride, or not bride exactly, but, you know, the young woman, whether anybody else likes it or not, including her. And that is a form of wedding. Don't anybody, any of you young men here, think of doing that? Because it may be more. Anyway, it's called Rakshasa style. So yes, so it was their wedding day. And Rukmi was, you know, as a powerful Kshatriya, he was feeling terrible. And Rukmini, as a Kshatriya girl with the same type of spirit, she was also feeling very disturbed, and it was her wedding day. Not a good way to start a marriage. So Lord Balaram came and spoke to, first of all, to Rukmini. Although, first of all, he chastised Krishna, which made Rukmini feel a little better. And then he spoke to Rukmini and told her that, all different things. You know, these Kshatriyas, what can we do? They do things like that. And then chastised Krishna again, and then back to Rukmini, that everybody gets their karma, and, you know, what can we say? It's in the hands of providence, so we shouldn't get upset with Krishna too much, like this. And Rukmini became pacified. Yeah. Okay, anyway. Yes.
It was also that when they went to their home, and then they were playing dice, and one person, I forget the name, was insulting Krishna Bharamaji at the end of dice. They just covered boys, and then he smiled and showed his teeth.
Well, that's, yeah, the king of Kalinga. That's part of the killing of Rukmi. First of all, Balaram smashed Rukmi, and then smashed the king of Kalinga in the mouth, smashing his teeth, because he smiled, showing his teeth. Yes. So Lord Balaram, what happened was, well, we've just read how Lord Balaram killed Ramahashana Sutta. Sometimes the Lord does things which are somewhat inscrutable, in the sense that you could say they would be easy for people to object to, people who don't really understand so much or sufficiently. There's Ramahashana Sutta sitting on the Vyasasam, addressing the sages. And Lord Balaram enters the arena. And according to Vedic etiquette, someone who's sitting on the Vyasasam in an assembly, if some other respectable person, well, obviously he's sitting there, first of all, because he's a respectable person, and he's doing some special respectable function. Yeah. It may even be even more so just that he's doing the function. Like here we are sitting on the seat. Why? Because we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the particular point. So out of deference to Srimad Bhagavatam and its exalted message, the speaker, the book has to be higher, and the speaker, who is meant to be imparting the book is also in that sense indifference to the duty is meant to sit higher. So because he was in that situation himself, then he sort of had to sit higher. It's like a point of etiquette that the speaker is meant to sit higher, not just that he is higher or something, but he's actually meant, because he is giving the Bhagavatam, so he's kind of identified in that sense with the Bhagavatam and its message. So Ramahashan was in that situation. And Lord Balaram, who of course is a very respectable person, at least, he came into the assembly, and Ramahashana thought that even though he's a respectable person, that because I am speaking some whatever, some shastra or something, and this is, you know, this is the etiquette, that the speaker is not really meant to get down and offer obeisances and so on like that. I remember once going to Darshana, and they had many different families, and they worship the deities every 2 weeks or so. They change over one family to the next. So there was one boy, he was a brahmachari in Krishna Balaram temple, but he is a, like the oldest son in one of those families of the Darshana Brahmins. Well, they became, you know, like a real ISKCON devotee, and not just, you know, a sort of pundit type, Brijbasi pundit type. So when it came time for the family to do their couple of weeks, he came back from Krishna Balaram temple because he was the oldest son, and he had to actually, he was doing the whole, all the pujas and all that. So we visited the temple on Parikrama, Darshana Parikrama. We came and offered our obeisances. I knew he was there, and he was on the altar, and he saw us, and he came running out and offered his obeisances, and then went back in on the altar. Then a little later, we stayed perhaps half an hour or so. So a little later, he came and said that his father, who was like overseeing things, his father had chastised him, because he said, when you're doing the puja, you're not meant to offer anybody else respects. Yeah. Even if, you know, in a certain sense, normally you would. But when you're in that role, doing that duty, you're not meant to do that, to break your focus on the duty, because the duty is so exalted, and you are meant to be giving your attention to the duty. So in that sense, Ramahashana didn't get up. Not necessarily that he was thinking, oh, who is this? You know, and he became puffed up. Like in a more gross sense, of course he should have got off and offered his obeisances, because this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond even Shastra. But it was not exactly that he was thinking that Lord Balaram is just some nobody in particular, and so therefore there's no need. Although he was, you know, he should have actually been more mindful of Lord Balaram's position. So Lord Balaram, seeing that, took a piece of kusha grass and hit him or poked him with it. Normally if a piece of kusha grass hits you or you're poked with it, one piece of kusha grass, normally you won't die. It's sort of like it's like, it doesn't really look like a grass. It grows in clumps like a plant. Yeah. But still, it's not like anything solid. But by the potency of Lord Balaram, he died. Yeah. So, Lord Balaram, on one hand, he was right to do that. To show that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has to always be accepted and offered respect. And it's not just a matter of Vedic etiquette or something, but this is an absolute point. This is an absolute point. We have to accept the Supreme Lord and not be mistaken about his position. But still, the Brahmins there, well, first of all, they said, actually, you know, you're the Supreme Lord, so it's okay. You know, you can just do these things. But then they said that, you know, really speaking, it wasn't so good, so we think you should do something. You should atone for it. At least to set an example, that would be the best thing. So Lord Balaram said, fine. And then, among other things, they told him to go on pilgrimage. He was already on a type of pilgrimage. At least he was already moving around. Because, although it's not really discussed so much in the Bhagavatam, when the Battle of Kurukshetra started, then he felt very frustrated because he felt that the battle could be avoided. Lord Balaram, one of his key interests and expertises is negotiation. He's a very expert negotiator. If two parties are at odds with each other, he can find ways to bring them together and balance things out and make a solution which people will actually be happy with. So he felt that something could be done. But Krishna didn't seem to want that. In fact, Krishna himself had become frustrated in his own way. Krishna wanted the battle. So therefore, and of course, you know, it's all part of the Leela, but Duryodhan, the leader of the other side, was very dear to Balaram in a certain particular way. Jiva Goswami says that this was a special arrangement of the Leela Shakti. Even though Duryodhan was a demon, and the Supreme Lord, you know, he doesn't like demons, but due to the influence of the Leela Shakti in the course of the pastimes, because Duryodhan had been such an attentive student in club fighting under the direction of Lord Balaram, so Lord Balaram developed some type of a soft spot for him. So Lord Balaram was frustrated that this battle could not be avoided. So he left. Krishna stayed, as we know, and he participated, driving the chariot mainly, Arjuna. But Lord Balaram, he felt, no, I don't like this, I've had enough. So he went. And while the battle was starting, he was there in this pastime with Romahashna Sutta. And then, as the battle was continuing, he went to these places. So, in other words, he was moving around quite quickly. And then he came at the end, as mentioned already, in the summary. He came to where Bhima and Duryodhan were about to fight, which was right at the end of the battle, Kurukshetra. Still within that 18-day period. Yeah. So anyway, at some point, in the build-up to the battle itself. After Lord Krishna's final attempt to negotiate peace and being mistreated by Duryodhana again, then at some point during that build-up where it appeared the battle was inevitable, then Lord Balaram left. So he went to all these places. Some very nice places. Some of us may have been there. Venkata Hill, Tirumala, the Tirumala Hill where the Tirupati temple is. The Kanchipuram. These places were already famous places of pilgrimage before the appearance of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. Kanchipuram, there's a famous temple there of Varada Raj, of Lord Vishnu. Big temple, a very nice temple. And the exalted Kaveri River, which runs by Sri Rangam, which is also mentioned here, which is also a famous place of pilgrimage. We were there at Sri Rangam many years ago, and we went and bathed in the Kaveri River, and we were bathing away. And we would, you know, every now and then, it's quite shallow, stand there in the water. And suddenly we noticed, oh, our feet were being bitten by little fish. All these little fish. Little schools of fish coming and biting our feet. And we asked the local people why they do that. You know, that they get enough food. And they said, well, no. Nearby is the cremation ghat. And they, you know, oftentimes they throw the bodies in, they haven't been fully burned. And the fish have developed a taste for that. And the same thing at Keshi Ghat, actually, in Vrindavan. Well, yeah, it's considered not wise to bathe from Keshi Ghat going a little further down the Yamuna because the turtles have developed the same taste because of the cremation ghat is just further down. But, yeah, the holy Sri Ranga, where Lord Krishna manifested himself, Sri Rangam, Ranga Kshetra, is a magnificent temple. And a very nice place, very interesting place. But it was already there. It was already there before Lord Balaram visited there. And these various other places. Then to Setu Banda, he went to, or the southern Mathura, which is Madurai, where there's the Meenakshi temple of Durga. And Setu Banda, where Lord Ram broke the bridge when they finished the whole pastime of going to Lanka and rescuing Sita. Yeah, that place is there at Rameshwaram. Anyway, yeah, there used to be a temple there. It's right down the southern end of the Rameshwaram Island. There used to be a temple there, but there was a storm and it got washed away. Yeah. So Lord Balaram went to all these places. He went to Gaya. In the purport, it's mentioned how he went to Gaya. And normally you go to Gaya when your father has died. Normally your father. You do ceremonies particularly for your father and also for the other forefathers, but it's generally in the great majority of cases done in the context of one's father's passing away. and then one may offer also oblations for the grandfather. But then otherwise, in a general sense, for the forefathers, one may do some things there. But Lord Balaram's father and grandfather were still present. So why did he do that? Well, as is pointed out here, drawing from the Vaishnav Toshini, which is Sanatan Goswami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur somehow extracted some point there that that his father had told him, either Vasudev had told him that you should go there anyway and make offerings to the forefathers. And then from Vaishnav Toshini, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, drawing insight from Vaishnav Toshini, which is, I think, Sanatana Goswami's commentary on the Bhagavatam, explains that even though the Lord Balaram was near Jagannath Puri, he didn't go there, because there already Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra already were being worshipped. And he didn't want to go there and be put in that transcendentally embarrassing situation of seeing himself being worshipped. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has these sensitivities, personal sensitivities. Like Krishna, every morning, as described in the 10th canto, Krishna wakes up. And what does he do? Well, he takes a bath and then he meditates on himself. This is his sadhana. Lord Balaram wakes up in the morning, takes a bath, and what does he do? He meditates on Krishna. He doesn't sit down and meditate on himself, although there would be nothing wrong with that. But he is in the mood of the devotee, so therefore he meditates on Krishna. But Krishna is very much in the mood of being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He meditates on himself, and he enjoys that very much. So these are some of the things which are described here. Any comment or question? It's Vishnu. Yeah. It's Vishnu, yeah. Sri Nivas, Vishnu, the resting place of Lakshmi, as far as I'm aware. But you know, yeah, it's very rich, but that's only in the last previous century that it became very opulent. Otherwise, it was, you know, one of these temples up on top of a hill. You get these temples on top of a hill. And it was very hard to reach. And it was not opulent. But then some people went there and offered prayers and became very wealthy. So therefore they started a campaign of promoting the temple on that basis. And as a result, the temple started becoming more popular, and then more people became wealthy. And then they really started promoting it in that way. And now it's known for that, you know, universally. throughout India at least. And so it's only been in the last less than 100 years that it's become opulent. Otherwise it was up on top of the hill, and you know, there were no motor cars to get up there. Oh, it was a big job. So people didn't really go there. And one devotee, well, Prabhupada was discussing this, and one devotee suggested to Prabhupada, why don't we start a rumor like that about, I mean, this was in Bombay, about Radha Rasa Bihari. And Prabhupada said, no, we don't want people coming with that sort of mentality. Yeah. Because, you know, it happens. For example, you know, I've had people come to me and say, couples, that they came, they were not able to have a child for some years in their marriage. They came and prayed to Radha Radhanath, and they had a child. And they're coming to offer their thanks. I've had a number of couples come to me. I've also had people say that they were unsuccessful financially. They prayed to Radha Radhanath, and suddenly, bang, their business just took off, and things like that. But in that case, I forget if it was Giriraj Maharaj or who it was who told me, but I remember some years ago, someone said they were present with Srila Prabhupada when this thing about Tirupati was brought up. And Prabhupada said, no, we don't want people coming with that sort of mentality, because then it'll become like an anatha, and they won't really become devotees for the sake of being devotees, but it'll be tinged, heavily tinged. And you see them if you go there to the Tirumala temple, then, you know, they have all these brahmins, they get so much money every day, 7 days a week. Particularly the weekend, Saturday and Sunday is just bizarre. And they have this group of people. They simply sit there all day, brahmins, counting money. I've seen like half a dozen of them. They're just sitting there. This big pile of money.
Is there somebody sitting next to the Brahmins and counting money that they have books?
Well, our devotees have a permanent bookstall there.
Must be amazing.
From the temple at the bottom. The town is called Tirupati, which is at the bottom.
Sure.
The hill is Tirumala, and the temple is actually the Tirumala temple. But yeah, our devotees have a permanent place there. They're there 7 days a week. And that's one of the main sources of income, how they were able to build the temple, which was just opened, I think, 1 year ago. Yeah.
Well, you know, this JG
Venkateshwara,
where do you read about from the Srimad Bhagavatam?
He's not there.
Well,
that's Balaji Venkateshwara.
He's
mentioned here. Yeah, he went. Lord Chaitanya went to Venkata Hill, Venkateshwar. That Tirumala is also called Venkata Hill.
What I actually meant is you never read of any pastimes of these
deities. Yeah, well, you have to. You know, you'd have to go down there. They have literatures of their own, but I don't think you find in the actual Vedic scriptures as such. I'm not aware of there being accounts like in the Puranas.
How do you get up the Yamuna?
You can walk, or you can drive up, take a bus, take a taxi.
I haven't got a cable car up there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Maharaj, what does Aniruddha and Pradyumna and Shankarshan, what do they look like?
They look like Krishna. Well, they're different forms, but in Goloka, in Sweta Dweep, they're there, which is part of Goloka, the surrounding area. So they look like Krishna, two-armed forms, more or less identical to Krishna. And, you know, there's the story of Aniruddha with who? The daughter of Duryodhana, right? Wasn't it? Lakshmana? That's Aniruddha? I think so. In the 10th canto. And Lakshmana dreamt of Aniruddha. And she just decided, this man, he's going to be my husband. But she'd never seen him. So she asked one of her assistants, who was a mystical yogini, you know, who is this? Show me pictures of all the, you know, like very handsome young Kshatriya men on the planet. So that person showed her different pictures, including Krishna. And when she saw Krishna, she thought, oh, you know, this is almost him. She was struck, but not quite. And then she saw Pradyumna, and she thought, wow, you know, this is just, but not quite. And then she saw the picture of Aniruddha, and she knew, yes, this is him. So they look like Krishna. They look like Krishna.
And they're expansions of Balaram.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, he expands as Sankarshan, and then from Sankarshan the other three come. And from that Sankarshan comes a second Sankarshan, who's called Mahasankarshan, who is the chief presiding deity in Vaikuntha, the realm beneath Goloka. And then from him, and he's four-armed, and from him comes another Vasudeva, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. They're all four-armed. And the Vasudeva, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Sankarshan and Goloka, they're generally two-armed, although sometimes they may be four-armed.
Maharaj, I have a question with how Roma Hashan Sutta is he categorized under the demons and
No, he's not a demon. He's the father of... He's big Shastric authority, actually. But somehow, he wasn't exactly a pure devotee. So therefore he made that miscalculation with Lord Balaram. He's big pundit and sort of devotee to some degree.
When the Balaram kills,
they
also deliberate like when Krishna kills.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.